Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. I'm your host, John Johnson. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, industry shill things. Oh, I'm not supposed to look behind the curtain. Other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me, it's Other John. Hi, John. Hi, Other John. No, I'm not going to do that. I think Archer's going to... Joe's just like, no, don't wave off. Okay. Joe's like, I've been doing radio a long time, and it's never good when the host starts talking to himself in the third person, right? Cool. Hey, this segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never really have too much ammo. I didn't feel like doing the long, drawn-out. Hey, guess what? Michael Grasso's on. Michael, how's it going, man?
It's going good, John. How are you?
I am living the dream, sir. Absolutely living the dream. And hopefully people will have listened to the Steve Fisher episode, which will have aired like 4 weeks from any time travel. I'm not doing that right now. How are you, sir? You just came back from somewhere cool. How'd that go?
Outstanding. After doing a couple of years of chemo, I had to give my wife exactly what she wanted, and that was 3 weeks in Italy. And it was amazing, absolutely amazing.
So I got to ask, when like the end of the third week was coming up, and you're like, you know what? I could just live over here. This would be okay. Or were you like, no, want to go home?
You know, that's kind of interesting. I mean, it was really a cool place to go visit. The history is amazing. I know, you know, when you walk into a church that was made during the Crusades in Sicily in the, whatever it is, 1100s, 1200s. And then you think, well, that's like, 700 years, 600 years before people were, you know, fighting Indians in the United States. So it was like kind of interesting. It was just, history is completely different there. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of like the sense of scale is different, because like the oldest stuff in this country is not super old compared to the rest of the world.
No.
So, but.
It was pretty funny. I was once a guest, at the Yeoman Waters at the Tower of London, and I was in their little pub that they have under the tower, and a clock struck on the wall on a mantelpiece. And I remember one of the yeomen pointed at me and says, you see that clock? That's older than your country. And I was like, wow, you know, scratching my head going, wow, it's a lot of perspective. A lot of perspective. History is a huge perspective that we don't really pay attention to.
No. And it's funny, 'cause I kind of dig history. I feel like I dig history more than some people my age, and maybe that's true, maybe not. But like the reason why I've always enjoyed history is because it really puts a nice like sort of touchstone on how insignificant whatever I feel like my problems actually are. It's like in the scale of time in the universe, this doesn't really matter, which is nice for me. I find comfort in that. So for those that don't know, man, who are you? What do you do? What did you do? What introduction would you like to give yourself? And then we'll hop into the show, or maybe we'll talk about history. I don't really care. It's my show. I'll do what I want. It's awesome that way.
I don't know. Let's see. I did 35 years with the Los Angeles Police Department. I worked all kinds of different jobs, everything from narcotics to homicide to tactics, firearms. Wow, a little bit of everything. I was in L.A. during some really great times, everything from earthquakes to riots to the Pope visiting to the Olympics. I'm old, apparently. I went into the academy in 1980. So, yeah, I think I'm going to be 61 or something. Yeah, I'm old.
Well, I mean, old compared to a mountain or old compared to an avocado? So.
Yeah, back to the history again, right?
Right.
Relatively a scratch on the surface of the Colosseum.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Flavius Amphitheater. It's not the Colosseum. That's just a BS word that people call it, got yelled at by the archaeologists for calling it Colosseum.
That's incredible. Well, and so it's always kind of funny to me because at least recently I've become very aware that a lot of the people I converse with as whatever the bottom rung of a peer is, and not that they are. What I'm trying to imply is I don't like to consider myself a peer because I've not been doing this nearly as long. So whatever, like, the bottom rung of someone that I will have a technical conversation with and possibly disagree with them on something. But what's interesting to me is a lot of those people that are gracious enough to not hit me when I say stuff that they've already worked out before I was born is that they've been doing this a very long time, much longer than I have. And in some cases, like you mentioned, I was born in 1983, not to make you feel old. But yeah, so the nice thing is, like, I've at least aged to the point where I'm aware of it, whereas before I was blissfully ignorant and said things that were very stupid. So I guess my question, what I would like to discuss with you is a conversation that we've sort of had in the past is what level of mistake or mistakes is someone allowed to make before they become an instructor versus after they become an instructor, whether that's mistakes in logic or thinking or performance mistakes or whatever. It's like a super vague, and I didn't really frame it very well. But do you kind of get what I'm asking there?
Yeah, I think I do. You know, it's kind of interesting because as an instructor, so let me go back to anything that I'm about to say is my own opinion.
Sure,
it's just my opinion based on my life experiences. So it's my luggage that I'm carrying around. And I'm going to make that statement because this is going to go out on the internet and there's all kinds of people. Some of them actually know what they're talking about. Most have no idea.
Right.
But my point would be in the pursuit of learning, first off, to be an instructor, you always are a student. The whole trick is sometimes an instructor, always a student. So you're always learning. And you're always absorbing, and it's every day. And someone should be able, you should be able to go to any class and absorb something.
Mm-hmm.
You may disagree with 99.9% of it, but they may teach you in a way that you didn't look at it before. And you say to yourself, I could use that. I can explain this action in that way, and I might reach two or three more people in the class. So you're always looking for things like that. And as an instructor, you're making mistakes. You just have to be smart enough to see them before you make them.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's odd. And that is, I'm about to do something. Oh, you know what? No, I'm not going to do that. This class isn't ready for it, or this may be too dangerous, or you know what, there's a chance this can be misconstrued, blah, 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 blah. And I think as an instructor, you can make mistakes in your mind and you can stop them, but once you make them outright, you're liable for them. And that's when you're a student, it's different. when you're an instructor and you're standing in front of the class, way different. And that, again, that comes from a mindset. Okay, you can call it whatever you want. That's the LAPD mindset of an instructor. We hold ourselves to a different level, maybe,
right?
If you want to call it that. But yeah, I think we had a discussion once about a safety violation and what LAPD does to an instructor that has a safety violation. You know, it's just there's just certain things that will destroy your credibility, and that's that.
Well, so let me interrupt because we have to go to break. And you know, you didn't mention Gray Guns in this, so I could actually say Mike Grasso from Gray Guns if you'd like, or I can edit this part out. Do you have a preference?
No, maybe at a point we could talk about that. Like, what are you doing now?
Well, we'll do that. But right now, we're going to go to break, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977, a legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters, 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Michael Grasso, and you were saying sort of before the break that, you know, what is the responsibility of an instructor, or what is, you know, what is an instructor doing? And you had sort of mentioned that they are, you know, they are able to recognize a mistake before they make it and just not make the mistake. And what's interesting to me is I have developed my, you know, my capacity to instruct, and it's something that I have spent quite a bit of time trying to hone, and it's something that I plan on spending quite a bit of time on planning to hone, because I'm not anywhere close to where I would like to be as an instructor yet, but I'm working on it, is recognizing when the student is about to make a mistake and whether or not it's a mistake that is going to be a growing point for them or is going to be something that is dangerous and can't be allowed to happen. And like that internal calculus, you know, like what kind of mistake is about to happen here? Is this something I need to stop, or is this something I can let play? Will this be a good teaching moment, or will it not be a good, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think in a way that goes without saying. A good instructor should have the ability to perceive what is about to happen in his class, and if it's going to be something bad, stop it. And it's kind of interesting. You said, you know, whether you want that to continue or not, and it all depends on kind of is it a teachable moment? Do I lose this student over it? You know, is it dangerous? I think always is it dangerous always has to be looked at first. You know, is it something that they're going to do in a practical scenario that you could look at and go, you know what, I'm gonna let him kind of fall on his face a little bit there, but that might teach him better. You know, that's a hard one to just be generic about.
Yeah. Well, it's a very much a case-by-case basis. But what I'm – so kind of what I'm hoping is that people listening to this episode, because I know for a fact there are quite a few instructors that listen to this that might be local or regional instructors or maybe even national instructors that just haven't considered it before. But as you know, I think that to really succeed well – to succeed to a high standard at anything, it requires pre-need decision making and a lot of forethought. And I've run into quite a few other instructors or fellow instructors that don't seem to consider as deeply as I try to, at least, some of what we're discussing. So I think it's kind of an interesting conversation to have. If it's not, people could turn the episode off and skip to the next one. You know, so it's kind of nice.
You know, we are talking about instructors. So here's the thing. I have personally gone through thousands and thousands of hours of instruction in multiple countries and multiple departments, multiple areas. So I've seen a lot of instructors, and I'm doing the air quotes as I say that. And my point is, if I look at you and I say, wow, you're a pretty good instructor, if I use the word, in my mind, you are actually an instructor. But I have been around a lot of people who take on that mantle of instructor that I'll just kind of frown and say, so you have some experience, but that doesn't mean you can teach.
Right.
We go back to LAPD because it's my luggage, right?
Sure.
And when you become an instructor at LAPD, if you go to the academy and you have your SME, right? You go to some type of specific thing, whether it's report writing or firearms or tactics, you all go to the same instructor school, and it takes a long time. It's like 6 months of just learning how to teach, not learning how to teach your subject, but learning how to teach, which is completely different. You learn the psychology of teaching and how people learn and why they learn and how you need to present it. There's a lot to that, not the subject matter. The subject matter will come in time being around it. Being able to teach, being able to be an instructor is a completely different thing. And so, you and I belong to a bunch of Facebook groups. And I'm not really that active, but I read them when I have a chance. And I read these instructors and their thoughts, their thought processes. And I look at them and go, yeah, you're not an instructor. Because they're not trying to teach. They're trying to get people to come to their class. And they're trying to make money. And in that, a lot of the instruction is lost. That's my luggage. You don't have to agree with it. And in fact, the truth is, I really don't care if you agree or not. I'm at that point in my life that I just go, yeah, whatever.
And that's kind of an interesting thing because, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's kind of. Here, we'll have this conversation not on the radio. How about that? Because that's actually a – I have thoughts, but I don't want to share them right now. It's funny how that works. So that's kind of an interesting thing too, though, as far as when why are so many people like in such a rush to take on the mantle of responsibility – instructor
ego. It's only an ego. It has nothing to do with, John. It has nothing to do with anything but ego. What's in it for me? That's all. They want to be able to stand up in front of a class and have people go, ooh. I mean, look at Instagram. You know, how many people now are drawing from the AIWB and shooting white dummies, you know, and doing crazy. I probably can't say that.
Well, I mean, you said it, so
yeah.
Here we are.
and doing crazy stuff. And you look at it, and they have X amount of followers. You know, it's all about satisfaction. I mean, there has to be dopamine involved in this. There has to be something that says, well, 73 people liked my post. Ah, I validated myself. No, you didn't. You know, be reasonable, but people aren't reasonable. So, I mean, I look at it and go, yeah, whatever. I have 800,000 followers. Yeah, you know.
That's nice.
So did David Koresh, you know. I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, it's not having a bunch of followers, you know. You know, I'm sure Adolf Hitler, you know, in the 30s had a bunch of followers. And if you had an Instagram page, people would have liked it, you know. So it's like, well. Let's look at this from common sense, but common sense isn't common. So, regardless.
I love this episode so hard right now. I can't even begin to tell you. And we got to go to break in a couple minutes. So I want to think about what I want to say that's going to get you to say some other stuff that's going to make people mad. Because this is awesome.
Again, I don't really care.
Oh, I know. It's incredible.
I don't care.
When it's stuff too that I want to say, but it doesn't have quite the gravitas when I say it versus when you say it, you're hard to argue with. So it is kind of interesting to me, though, and we got about a minute and a half left, and I'm going to interrupt you. I apologize in advance. That the point I was trying to get across is, you know, when I'm watching a line, it's the most stressful thing that I will do. I've had people try to kill me, and it wasn't as stressful as watching a line of 10 shooters, you know, because I take it incredibly seriously. And you've been on lines that I've worked, and I hope that it comes across in my demeanor when I'm doing it. But, like, I have a very strong understanding of everything that could go wrong and why it would be my fault.
And it seems
like a lot of people, when they get into this, don't necessarily have that. We got about 30 seconds left, and I'll interrupt you.
Then when we come back, I'll tell a story about that that happened on a line, on a rifle line.
Perfect.
But yeah, in all honesty, it should make you sick.
Yeah.
When you're watching the line, your stomach should be upset. You should be sick because at any given moment, someone could take their life.
Yeah.
Not out of stupidity, out of just, you know, it's just a moment and something happens. And I'll tell you that story when we get back.
Okay. I just see Joe like noting down like time hacks. It's like, oh, I got to beep something. Oh, I got to beep something. Anyway, we're talking with Michael Grasso, and you're listening to a very beep-filled Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment also brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light on it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the 1200 lumen EDCL 2T handheld or 500 lumen EDCL 1T handheld to the 1000 lumen upgraded fits in all your old duty and concealment holsters X300 Ultra to the brand new flat stiletto rechargeable pocket light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell Aziz Light ever again. Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. So we're talking with Michael Grasso, and he's just saying whatever he feels like, and it's incredible, and I am so happy right now. Tell me this story about someone doing something.
Well, here's the moment. So it was after the Bank of America shootout. Larry Mudgeon and myself were dealing with the Urban Police Rifle Program. We had just taught at NTOA. We had instructors from all the United States come into class because we were starting the rifle revolution for patrol. And I had a line, and I was watching my four or five people, and I had a lefty on my line, and I'm watching them, and the typical thing. So we're firing 5.56s, right? M4 type weapons, some A1s, there's a mixture of weapons. And boom, round goes off, casing is ejected right into the shirt of a guy, two bodies down. So if you've ever, a casing from like a 9mm or a 45 or a 40 is one thing, but a casing from a 5.56, they're superheated. They're hot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It goes like right in this guy's shirt, and he does this spin on the line. And people are saying, well, what should you have been doing? Well, what I'm doing is I'm watching two things. I'm watching muzzles, and I'm watching ejection patterns. So I can gauge what's going on, because that's what I'm doing. The drill was pretty simple, and so I'm watching the drill also, but I'm also watching the safety aspect. I'm working the line. I'm like a safety officer at that point. I'm fixing problems, but really my job at that point is safety. So This guy flips around and he starts to cover the guy next to him. So I step in between them, I grab the muzzle, flip it around, point it in the air.
Yeah.
Okay? So everybody, the whistle goes off. I have a whistle in my mouth. You know, the whistle goes off. The line dies immediately. And I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Wow, caught that one. The man that almost got covered, he's happy. The officer that got burnt and moved, he's feeling pretty ashamed. And everything's okay. And I'm like, wow, I did a good job. This is good. You know, I flip the safety on and his weapon. I hand him back his weapon. And Larry turns to me, and Larry's face is white. And I'm like, what's up, Larry? And he goes, Mike, go sit down. And I'm like, what's up, bud? And he's like, go sit down. And so I back up off the line, and the other instructors come up, and they're talking to the students. And he sits me down. And he goes, he points at the inside of my pants. And I look down, and on the inside of my pants is basically a smudge burn mark from the birdcage of the AR. So what had happened was, as he spun around and I grabbed it to cover, the actual muzzle jammed me on the inside of my leg as I spun it and got it up in the air. And I didn't even notice that happening. It was just the movement. But on the inside of my leg, right across my femoral artery,
yeah,
is the smudge. And I took a deep breath and got a little nervous at that point, because you get nervous afterwards, because
yeah,
that's the time to get nervous, not during it.
Yep.
But I was thinking to myself, wow, saved the guy on the left.
Okay.
almost didn't save myself. But you think, and you move as an instructor, you move the weapon out of the way, you do it all, everything you're supposed to do, guided the weapon out of the way. You know, at the same time, my hand was moving, taking his hand off the weapon. So in reality, was there a danger? Sure, there's always a danger. Was it really bad? No. I want to tell myself that. But the truth is, that's your job. Your job is to be sick the whole time, because these things could happen. It's no one's fault. Could you have taped up everybody's collars? Could you, you know, yeah, there's all kinds of things that we do when we're using live fire and we're in houses and things like that. Yeah, do we tape things close around your neck? Sure. We do all the things needed to prevent that from happening. You know, gloves, elbow pads, tucking the arms in. You don't want to slam into doorways. Sure. Yeah, we do all of that kind of stuff. But could it still happen? Sure. People still trip.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that, because I wish Melody were here, because she could tell the story. But her and I went to a rifle class out of Pacquiao's place, and she was wearing a compression shirt with a tight, size too small compression shirt underneath a normal shirt. And I was next to her on the line, and we were, I don't remember what we were doing, but I do know the two pieces one piece of 5.56 brass just happened to manage to miracle its way underneath the compression shirt.
Sure.
You know, and she finished the drill and whatever, you know, it got done, and like nothing happened at all. But it's interesting, because she'll have those scars for the rest of her life. I mean,
like, oh, yeah,
how bad that burn was. And that's just, sometimes stuff happens. And especially with, you know, Melody, in my mind, is an incredibly talented shooter and instructor and whatever. And just, you know, she kept her composure, did what she was supposed to do. And that's what you do. But like, not especially newer folks that haven't been exposed to it. And if you're on a line for any length of time, you're going to get burned at some point.
I was down in Coronado on a training, SEAL training, and with SOG, which is the U.S. Marshals Special Operations Group, and we were doing this big combined training, and we made entry into one of their buildings, and pop, 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 and I felt this burning sensation across the back of my neck, and it was really bad. But I finished my drill and all that stuff, and one of the SEAL instructors came up to me afterward, and he goes, "All right, stand still." And I'm standing still, and he reaches out, and he tears the 5.56 casing that had bounced off the wall, got stuck on my collar, and had burnt and adhered itself to my neck.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Okay, you're fine. Move along."
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, "Okay, you know,
yeah,
it hurt. Yeah, I was focused. Yeah, you move on. Yeah, it happens. What are you going to do about it? If you jump up and down and scream and yell, you're probably going to cause some kind of safety violation." So, yeah, so we get back to, you know, safety violations. That's the prime. If you make certain mistakes in training, you know, you make entry and you're supposed to button hook, but you crisscross. And you screwed it up. You had already planned on doing it. Your eyes were there. The rest of the stack knew what you were doing, and you decided to do something else. Well, the number two man has to already take into consideration that you're going to – and I said that now. And he's going to have to move off of your movement. So he's not following you. He's going to do the opposite. So the room gets cleared. But the truth is, it's training. If you screw something up, everybody flows with it. Improvise, adapt, overcome.
Right.
As the instructor, kind of different when you screw up in front of the class. And I think a lot of that has to do with what you perceive to be credibility at the end of that class. That's the big thing. You have a bunch of other A personalities watching your class, and they're there with you. And you do something that you lose credibility over, there's a problem. There's a problem there.
Well, and that's kind of, I have somewhere to go with this, but we're coming up on a break again. So we'll pause now so that I'm not interrupting you because I don't like to do it. And we'll come back to this. So we're talking with Michael Grasso. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by BigTexOutdoors.com. BigTexOutdoors.com is the best place for you to find all your everyday carry needs at the absolute best prices. Maybe you need all the lumens from Surefire at the lowest price? No problem. Spend too much time alone in your room and now you need an RMR on your carry pistol? Well, BigTexOutdoors.com has those. Glock accessories? Yup. Fast, cheap shipping, 100% hassle-free returns, all that and more. And best of all, BigTexOutdoors.com has Ike. He's a good man and thorough. I like Ike. Everybody likes Ike, and you'll like Ike, too. Visit BigTexOutdoors.com today and find out what happens when every customer is a friend, not just an order. So we're talking about instructorship, instructorial duties, or I don't know. We're really just kind of talking about whatever we want to talk about, which is kind of nice. But you were saying, you know, you were talking about credibility and like how you not necessarily how you establish credibility, but certainly how you lose credibility as an instructor. And I kind of like to get more of your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, here, let's be honest. So I'll tell you another. You want to hear another story?
Yes.
I'll tell you another story. All right. When we did our transition, when we transitioned from revolvers to semi-autos, that's when I really started my internship as an instructor. And one day on the line, we were teaching both Berettas and Smith & Wessons. And if you're familiar with both weapons, one has a mag safety and one doesn't.
Sure.
And there was a lot of problems about that. Lots and lots and lots of problems. So we had to really, we teach one way. So you teach to a standard. And so we always spoke about, hey, this weapon will fire if there's no magazine in it. And this weapon won't fire with a magazine in it. So we are always going to say the weapon will fire without a magazine.
Right.
So, and so we're just reiterating that. And officer, an instructor, a chief instructor, dumped his mag and did everything, was getting ready for his demo in front of the class, and he was at a 90-degree angle to the class up on this berm, and the class is standing there, and he's talking about front sight picture and trigger press, and boom. And the thing was, he said, okay, so I'm paying attention. You see, about 20 yards down on that brick wall, that one red brick has got the white spot on it. Yeah, that's what my front sight picture is, and I'll never forget it. So everybody looks over at the white spot, you know, and they said, that's my front sight picture, blah, 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 and he presses the trigger, and guess what?
He hit that.
There's a round in the chamber.
Yeah.
And he breaks the piece of white right off there.
Well, now, I mean, at least he didn't miss.
Yep. But we don't look at it that way.
He immediately
looked at the class, pointed to one of the instructors and said, can you take over? Walked off out of the class, apologized to the class for breaking the safety rule, walked off, grabbed his stuff, and left. He was done. No more instructor. No longer an LAPD instructor. You lose credibility like that, you're gone. LAPD looks at you, you're gone. You can't teach again. You're finished.
Hmm.
You're done. And so that's my baggage. And it is because, hey, it's the basic safety rules. How in the future are you going to teach the basic safety rules? By saying, look, it's even happened to me? No. That means that you broke the safety rules. It's not a teachable moment. I am no longer an instructor moment. That's the way I look at it, and that's the way I would look at any instructor that did that. And that's my baggage. That's just me. And you can argue on it and say, well, it's a teachable moment and blah, blah. No.
Well,
it's not a teachable moment. You screwed up.
So what's funny about that is, like, we have argued on this, so everyone listening to this is going to be like, John's not going to say much here, and I just want everyone to understand the reason for that is because I think we spent 2 or 3 hours on this once.
It
was a super cool conversation. I wish you guys could have heard it, but you're not going to hear it now because we're very limited on time, and it's my show, and Michael's not going to get a fair chance to respond once I take up all of the time left in the segment. And
the truth is, it's pretty simple. Who is going to argue to say it's a teachable moment? The instructors that have done it. Because an instructor that has not done it is going to sit there and say, yeah, that would be a big screw up. But the instructor that has screwed up is going to say, well, but it's a teachable moment. Well, yeah, because you're trying to get some of your credibility back.
Well,
and that's the way I feel about this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, again, it's my personal opinion, but I would have a hard time going to a class and having Bob Smith, and I hope there's no Bob Smith out there that's an instructor, but there probably is, whatever, Bob Smith say, yeah, you know, I had this, you know, I shot one of my students once because, but that was a teachable moment. The next thing that would be happening, you would hear, is my car starting up.
Well, I mean, so it's here. I'll name a name. Sonny Puzica still teaches classes, and he shot his AI. Now, should he still be teaching classes? I don't know.
No.
Here's my
answer to that. No.
Well, here's my answer
and
to that.
I don't really care.
Yeah, I know. Here's my answer to that. I don't feel that I'm in the position to. I'm in the position to do whatever I want, but I am choosing to not cast stones at anyone.
But I'm not casting stones.
No,
I'm just saying.
I realize
I'm just
that.
Saying if you look into you if you're going to spend your money,
sure,
and your time, which is more important than your money.
Yep.
Then you should be vetting your instructors pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
And if one of your instructors shot his AI, then I am going to say I probably don't want to go to his school.
I agree with you.
On multiple reasons.
I agree with you.
But again, if he can stand up there and give you reasons why you should still come to his school, then either A, you're gullible, or B, he's got a golden tongue, or C, maybe if I listen to him enough, I can figure out, well, is there a teachable moment there? But that's going to be a really hard hurdle for me to get over. And
sure.
I don't know who this Sonny, I don't know, what did you say his last name was?
Pizikas. But we could really move on from this because
we only
got about 3 minutes left.
Okay, let's move on.
Yeah, here's one thing that I will say, and I think that my position on this is, just because it is my show and I want to give my position on this, there are certain things that I completely agree with you. Once that shark has been jumped, yeah, I'm done. Certain things, I don't know. I judge it on a case by case. My other thing, too, is that what I have always taken away from every instructor that I've ever trained with is, here's what we're doing. Here's why we're doing it. The reason why we know to do it this way is because at some point or another, somebody made a mistake, and we are trying to mitigate the risk of making that mistake. So in my mind, there is a certain level of, I made this mistake, so I'm going to tell you about this mistake that I made, whether it was in a lethal force encounter or not. And that's what you're paying me money for, is so that you don't have to go make this mistake I made. And I'll give you, for instance, you know, Craig Douglas teaches entangled gunfighting. Well, why does he teach that? Because he bought a lot of drugs from people and almost got killed several different times during drug buys, where he will tell you, hey, I made mistakes. So I think that the difficulty, and then we're going to have to go.
But that's a completely different type of mistake. And it's not really a mistake. That's a life experience that he learned something from. Entangled gunfights happen. They're rare. In reality, they are rare. But can it happen? Yes. I mean, if you think about Craig, who's a wonderful guy, a great instructor, he was doing a specific thing. He's a UC.
Let me do this. Hold on. Wait. So we only got a minute left, and I want people to go be able to buy your stuff and find out more. Where can they find you at? And then we got to go because we're out of time.
Well, I don't teach anymore. I stay away from that kind of stuff. But I am working with Bruce Gray at Gray Guns, designing some law enforcement equipment and hard duty use stuff. And so, I mean, if you want to go to www.grayguns and look at the stuff for SIGs that he's designed with SIG, go ahead and do it.
Nice.
Not really why I said that, but go ahead.
Yeah, I know. But so anyway, Michael, I appreciate you taking time, brother. I would like to continue this conversation on the show at some point. And we'll start at the beginning. I actually think that'd be a fun show where we can disagree and I argue with my betters. But I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
No problem, John. Take care.
All right. Hey, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. Really appreciate it. It helps us out. Also, remember, you can check us out on Spotify now. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.